Welcome to Lilydale Radio, featuring topics about spiritualism, mediumship, healing, spirituality, and the Lilydale Assembly, the world's largest center for the religion, philosophy, and science of spiritualism. This is Lilydale Radio.
It's time to get excited about angels. Today's show will focus on angel encounters in history, and welcome to Wednesdays with Willa. I am your host, Willa White, and this is my weekly podcast show. I'm a Lilydale registered medium, and it's my pleasure to bring this to you every week, a different topic relating to spiritualism, mediumship, healing, faith, family, and more. And I typically have a guest on the show. However, today I am flying solo. And that's because I wanted to make sure I got a chance to really cover this topic very well. And we're going to focus on evolution of angelology. And I'll get into what that is in just a bit. But I wanted to let people know, as far as tuning into my show, you can join me on my Facebook page, Willa White Medium. You can like and share and follow, and then you will be alerted as to when I go live. And I have lots of other events and things that I do as well, but this is something I think is really special to share with all of you, some of our conversations, our spiritual conversations and discussions we have. And so you have a little bit of a taste of me and a little bit of a taste of Lilydale because of this. There are other shows that are part of what's called the Lilydale, what I call the Lilydale Radio family. And so this does go out on blogtalkradio.com/Lilydale Radio. And so you can take a look at the other shows that are offered. There's one, I believe, on Monday evenings, Tuesday. You have the evening show with Colleen Bairdesign, Wednesday morning with me, Wednesday evening with John White, and Thursday morning with Celeste Elliott. So tune in to those on the Lilydale Radio Blog Talk. All right, everyone. So we're going to get into today's show, focusing on angel encounters in history and a bit about the evolution of angelology. So I'll just start with the understanding that angels have always fascinated me, and I have had my own angel encounters, and I'm currently refreshing my research about angels because I'm getting ready to teach this spring Walking with Angels, which is really a spiritual development class to help people in their understanding of connecting with their own angels, how to do that, and we're going to talk about in that class. So if anyone is interested in more information about that class, they can check out my website, willowwhite.com. And, you know, I'd love to have you in the class with me. It's a great show that I have here on Wednesday mornings, but then it'll be a Wednesday evening that I do that. So angels, we all know what they look like. They typically have wings and halos, and they're often represented as wearing long robes of white. And they live in heaven on clouds, and they come to earth to guard or to guide. And they're typically portrayed in art, in stories, in movies, and stained glass windows, and statues in gardens and cemeteries, and on the top of the Christmas tree. And there's an incredible history about angels, and it's especially featured in the Abrahamic religions and various cultures. So there is such a thing as angelology, and of course that would be the study of angels. And you know, so we'll be touching a bit about how this evolved throughout history. I really like pairing the two things, that which is a practical, but also that which is this esoteric understanding of angels that we can have. So if any of you want to share a bit on Facebook with your comments about your own personal experiences with angels, the beautiful guidance that you've received, or if you felt protected at certain times, feel free to do so. So I wanted to share real briefly that even though I'm going to focus more on Christianity because there's such a wealth of that in Judaism and what that has. There are other cultures that have had experiences with angels. And in my research, I thought it was really fascinating about the Thunderbird in the Native American culture. It's this widespread figure that a spirituality that's usually associated with like upper United States and Canada, and it's described as a supernatural being. And this, it's an enormous bird, and it's a symbol of power and strength, and it's protected humans from that which is considered evil. And I think it's really beautiful that there are stories in Native American spirituality that relate to that. So you'll find it in other places as you do your own research about that. But just wanted to give that out as a little tickle. So as far as a deeper understanding of angels, a lot of what is angelology has been experienced through, as I said, Judaism and Christianity and Islam. So angels are considered celestial beings of infinite power. And I like to say that they resemble the Knights of the Templar in the sense that they really fight to defend the values and the laws of the divine. And so they are of divine essence. And they have that purity, that space of truth that is ever present within them and their energy. And as a medium, I've noticed when I've connected with angels that there's a quite distinct vibrational frequency associated with angels. It's very different from when I perceived loved ones in spirit or spirit guides or animals in spirit. They all have their own kind of vibration to them. So I will say that it's one of the ways I most recognize the difference, other than sometimes, of course, the light quality when I see them and just having conversations. But back to the history of angelology. The first mention of angels is actually in the Bible in Genesis, the book of Genesis. And in Genesis 3:24, there are angels that are referenced as guarding the Garden of Eden. And that's mostly from, to prevent reentry of Adam and Eve at that point in biblical history. And we also have other instances, such as when Abraham, also in the book of Genesis, is sitting as an old man in the shade of an ancient oak tree, where three angels emerge from the shimmering heat. And Abraham welcomes them and offers them hospitality, and then he realizes that they're angels of the Lord that are visiting him in the guise of men without wings and without halos. And the angels deliver their message and they depart. And later the angels are identified as some of the top three archangels that are so famous out there, Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael. And then we also have the ladder of angels that is described by Jacob, who is the son of Isaac, who is the son of Abraham. So grandson of Abraham, we've got Jacob. And he dreamed of a ladder to heaven. And that really represents this obligation that we have as souls to climb in order to move closer and toward our understanding of God. This parallels the steps in the elevation of individual consciousness toward the divine. And so some people have referred to it as the stairway to heaven, and it's symbolically representing the human spiritual journey. And I think it's really important to note that as human beings living in a physical world, it's easier for us to think in terms of vertical ascension. It's just easier for us to encounter that as far as the true experience of dimensions. It's not necessarily up, it's more outward, and it's more understanding that we're overlapping. So it's just easier to think in terms of a vertical height to it all. And I think it's what a beautiful vision Jacob was given. And one of the things that I really appreciate about the Bible and many other spiritual teachings and writings that are out there is that when they talk in terms of spiritual experiences, they really give value to them. especially in the Bible, dreams are given value, intuitions, visitations by angels are certainly given value, and experiences where you're just like, how did that even happen? From the understandings of God has intervened in my life to heal me, to help me in these moments, and there's gratitude that's associated with them. So I really have always enjoyed that vision of the ladder of angels. And in meditations, it's possible that you would even feel that kind of connection with the angels and the vibration of them supporting you. Like they're cheering for you. They're really rooting you on in your life. So then we come to, and I'm skipping forward in history, of course, because I can't cover it all. We'd be here for thousands of years. But in the Exodus from Egypt, we have Moses and his people who are accompanied by an angel sent by God. And this angel travels along with the people through the wilderness after they've escaped slavery in Egypt, and they're heading toward freedom. And this angel acts as a personal guide, both by day in the form of a cloud and by night in the form of a pillar of fire. And so the more you understand about angels, the more you understand why they would be seen in that way. In fact, many people who are beginning in their spiritual development, when they have sensed beings of other vibrational frequency, of higher vibrational frequency, such as angels and spirit guides, they have noticed that they have almost a vague understanding of light or flame, or that it's just a pillar of light. There are a lot of these kinds of descriptions, so it really makes sense to me that that's how people would have been experiencing it at that time as well. And I think it's wonderful because the things that have happened before, we can learn from history, the mistakes, but we can also get excited about the successes. And when it comes to spiritual understanding, we say, if other people can be guided by God, if other people can be guided by an angel in the desert, then we can certainly be guided in our lives when we're walking through that which is difficult or traumatic or tragic. And so I always take that from the spiritual experiences of others. I think it's really important to focus in on that, the positive understanding of this. And I think it then makes sense that when Moses had the Ark of the Covenant, the box that houses the Ten Commandments has beautiful carved figures of angels on it, and those are identified as cherubim. So we've got those that have been going on, and to keep in mind that during this time of Israel, that the angels of God were envisioned as a heavenly army, and that they started to make a distinction of different ranks of angels that were acknowledged. And I'm going to get into that a little bit later. I want to cover real quickly back to the history part of this. I hope you can get excited about history the way I do. I've been really studying a lot of the ancient civilizations with my children, and it's helping me to make those connections of, that's where that happened in the Bible, or that's why this is such an important element to understanding how we are as human beings. So I'm just going to do a little side note on this, that there are some historians that credit ancient Babylonian religious beliefs for enhancing the Jewish beliefs about angels, including the names of angels. Now, how did that happen? Well, back in the day, Abraham set off because he just knew that he'd been told by God that he needed to travel, and he located what was then referred to as Canaan and became very established there. But then in 586 BC, the king of Judah was defeated in battle, and Jerusalem was captured by the Babylonians. And many of the people were taken into exile in Babylon, which would be the equivalent of modern-day Iraq right now. So that position as far as geography. And this had a great effect on their religious beliefs, including their beliefs about angels. And that makes sense to me, because when you're with other cultures, it starts to amplify it. Either helps you understand what you don't want to follow or do, or it helps you to say, wow, that's an aspect that I really want to bring out more in my own spiritual understanding. So I think it's wonderful that it had that kind of effect, especially because during that time of Babylon, if you study their religions, they can be quite dark. And, you know, if you're trying to combat the dark, you want to turn a light on. And angels certainly do that. Later on in the book of Daniel, it's set during another period of exile in Babylon, in the period of the Maccabean Revolt, which was around 165 BC. And in the book of Daniel, it marks an important stage in the development of ideas about angels. There became understandings of those different ranks, what I said earlier about how there were different ranks of angels, and information about angels appointed to watch over different cities and different nations. And I think that is wonderful, that people understand not only are there angels that assist us, but there are angels that assist our towns, our cities, our nations, and that we can call upon them and to help us have discernment. Many times I have called upon the angel of truth, help me with discernment now. And it really does help me have a flash of inspiration, of insight, calmness, peace, whatever it was that I needed in that moment to get me through. So we've got the understanding that there are nations and cities that have angels. Lilydale absolutely has an angel, and I have felt this angel, and I can feel the angel doing all it can to bring peace and calm and stability to that which is Lilydale. So I hope that you understand that we have those. And certainly in the book of Daniel, getting back to that, they mention the names of two angels in particular, Michael and Gabriel. Those two angels get a lot of playtime in the Bible. If you ever read through that, you'll recognize it. And in the book of Enoch, which didn't make it into the Bible because at the Council of Trent, they decided what books were going to be valued, and that was one of the books that was not going to be printed in the Bible at that time, although it had been printed in previous Bible renditions. What we see for the first time, the names of seven archangels: Uriel, Raphael, Raguel, Michael, Seraquel, Gabriel, and Remiel. And Enoch even tells the story about the fall of the angels. He's the reason what we know about the fall of angels and that understanding. So if anybody wants to read back in Enoch, it's kind of an interesting book. It has a bit of darkness. But that's even more so why we need the angels during those moments. So when the Jews returned from exile in Babylon, there was an obvious shift in the Jewish views on angels. Historians have noted that. There are hierarchies, ranks, and numbers of angels. And at that point, it became very recognized and very shared that a particular guardian angel was assigned to each person. And there was a fascination in the names of angels, and it really started to become something people were very aware of, and they would talk about having a guardian angel. And there was a Jewish sect called the Essenes. Some of you may have heard of the Essenes. When the Dead Sea Scrolls were found some years back, they became more prominent. I even remember reading a whole big book about the Dead Sea Scrolls and about the Essene community, and it was a very structured community, and they only ate certain things, and they had a lot of rituals to them. But one of the things to keep in mind about the Essenes is they are credited with keeping the Dead Sea Scrolls safe, and it is said that the Essenes are the ones who learned and kept secret the names of the angels. And of the various groups of Jews, there's only one group, the Sadducee, who denied the existence of angels and spirits. All other groups and all most Jewish movements and most Jewish writings, even from the time of Jesus on, show a very lively interest in angels. And I'm thankful for that, because it really is good that that has been sustained for so many years, that that's a part of our essence, almost on a genetic level, to understand that there are angels. And In the New Testament, there are two angels named, again, Gabriel, because he got to announce to Mary about burying a son, and Michael, who fights against evil powers. So Jesus talks a number of times about angels, and he told his disciples that each child has an angel. And I love how this is expressed. It's in Matthew 8:10, if you want to look it up. Each child has an angel who continually sees the face of God. Who continually sees the face of God. I think, you know, as spiritualists, we believe in turning our face to the divine, turning our face to the truth, to that which is the light. And I really enjoy that there's always going to be help and assistance. And there's something so beautiful of that our angels, even if we can't see the face of God from where we're standing right now, our angels see God for us in so many ways. And we can tune in to that vibration, and they will share their luminous teachings with us. So after the birth of Jesus and the rise of Christianity, Jewish beliefs about angels continued to develop. In fact, the Talmud, which was written by rabbis between 200 and 400 A.D., contains a great deal about angels. So thankful the rabbis were writing about that and making sure that was something that was talked about. And in the 5th century, an anonymous Christian monk who wrote under the name of Dionysius examined various passages from Scripture and even started to help us understand that there was a multi-level angel hierarchy. So in the Middle Ages, their fascination with angels continued in the esoteric form of Judaism called the Kabbalah. So Kabbalah has become very trendy to know about these days, and is the esoteric side of Judaism. And in a collection of writings called the Zohar, the Kabbalistic writings contain many names of angels. And this is one of my favorite facts I'm going to share with you today. In the Kabbalah writings of the Zohar, they have many names of angels and reference calling angels to help control elements of nature and help assist them in their lives. The Kabbalah mentions angels multiple times. I'm going to give you a very big number. You ready? 301,655,722 angels. That's a lot of names to write down and to understand that it was something that this was a big part of their spiritual understanding, the angels. Over 300 million angels. So, and that they were found in the 3 of the 7 spheres of existence, according to the Kabbalah understandings of these things. So I love when I can find in history things that where people have really done their research or sat and how did they have this? They had this by their own personal experiences. People were meditating. They were fasting. They were meditating. Amazing state of understanding that you can connect with those higher vibrations and there are higher powers assist us in our lives. So there are different angel hierarchies, and I just want to go through them real quickly. I don't want to spend too much time about it, but there are 3 hierarchies, and in each of the hierarchies, there are 3 groups of angels. And so in the first hierarchy, we have the seraphim, who are bathed in divine light, and they consist of fire and flame, and they help the lower angels. Then we have the cherubim, who guard the throne of God, and they're the ones that I mentioned are represented on the Ark of the Covenant. And then we have what is called the thrones, and they are wheels of fire with innumerable eyes, and they preserve stability and balance of the universe. So I'm breezing through this a bit, but if you can understand that there are different groups and hierarchies of angels that other people in the of the past have explored and had connections with, I think it's really fascinating that they've had this. And I don't know why angels don't get talked about in this way today. It's important that in a secular world that we keep our sacred mindset and that we understand that angels are assisting us in every way. So we have that first hierarchy. Okay, so in the second hierarchy, we have dominations, which absorb purity and goodness from God, and they transmit luminous teachings to the other angels, and they transmit light received from the first angelic hierarchy to the other angels, and they restore it with love and goodness. And then we have the virtues, which are emblems of knowledge. Typically, if they're represented in art, they have them holding a book in their hands. So that's how they're usually represented. And they transmit values of courage and action to humans through angels of the third hierarchy, which we're going to get to shortly, and they have the power to provoke miracles on earth. I think it's really important to know about these hierarchies and these different groups of angels because you know who to put your request into. miracles on earth, the powers, which is the third in the grouping of second hierarchy, elevate the consciousness of angels, and they act as guards typically. So there we have the second hierarchy. Now we're moving on to the third hierarchy, which serves as a bridge between the angelic plane and the human plane. So these are the angels that we are most likely going to be interacting with here on the earth plane. And I will say that these are angels I feel that I have connected with in my own understandings. And perhaps you have felt this too. Let me get to it. So in this third hierarchy, the first one would be principalities. They protect sacred teachings, the religious spirit, holiness, and divine love. And I appreciate that they do that. Their vocation is to transmit the reality of God. And the principalities are so important. They have a huge, big job here. They are entrusted with protecting guardian angels that guide people. They're responsible for guardian angel missions and the quality of advice and the effectiveness as guides for humans. They help with human affairs and they watch over the religious conversion of humans. And when I say religious conversion, I'm not trying to say a particular religion with any of that because I think it's important for people to find their own path. But for people to really feel connected with God, there is an experience that happens, and sometimes it takes multiple experiences, but it's this aha, this epiphany of understanding. Now, some of us, we just feel it from when we're little, from when we're just beginning as a soul on the earth plane, and that stays with us. For other people, they need happenings to occur. They have something that stimulates within them understanding they are interacting with something bigger than themselves. And angels are certainly a big part of helping that to come into being around us. I mean, what a responsibility it is for them to not only protect sacred teachings and protect us with our guardian angels, but to assist in that higher vibrational way. I appreciate everything that all the rest of the angels do, but I am very impressed with that particular grouping. And then we have, of course, the archangels, which are celestial beings of great power, and many people invoke them for anything related to success, to personal accomplishments, to healing, and we'll get into that a little bit later on here, more specifically. But these groupings of angels became very well known in Christianity, but also in Judaism, as I said. And Islam has its own take on angels. They're more androgynous in their representation of angels. And, angels in as far as Judaism and Christianity, some people really focused on male angels and some people focused on female angels at different parts in history. I think the thing to keep in mind, like I've said to my clients and students regarding spirit guides even, is it's not so much what their name is or what they look like. It's how they're working with you that's important. So I would just make that note about angels as well. So the big thing with archangels that I think is really wonderful, I know Michael and Gabriel and Raphael, they get a lot of airtime, like I said, and as well deserved, celebrity that they have, the things that they've been able to do. I mean, when you look at Michael, he's considered the head of God's army. And he's often portrayed with armor and sword because that's how, you know, especially in the Middle Ages, how people could relate to someone defending them. And even today, in today's time, you know, thinking in terms of that which is a knight in shining armor assisting you in your life, there's nothing like having that visage of Michael in that way. So Michael actually means who is like God. And many times when I've read about Michael, they say, who is like God? Question mark. Who is like God? What an interesting meaning to his name. Then we have Gabriel, who is known as Mighty One of God. That's what his name means. And he's considered a messenger, of course, because of the Annunciation. And he also helps to slay a dragon, and he has a lantern that lights the way. We have Raphael, which that name means God heals. And one of the reasons that means God heals, because in the book of Tobit, he actually does assist in healing Tobit. And he is represented typically as a healer holding a vase filled with ointments in his hand. He's also known as the Pilgrim's Angel. And so you can certainly do more reading on angels. I just really want to help you understand where you can start in your own research and journey about angels and perhaps get excited about their role in your life. I think having this kind of background assists. So with the archangels, they do help to awaken individual and universal consciousness. They help raise awareness about the preservation of life. They're alchemists of the human being, and they crush negative energy. That's by and large what I do help ask for help with from the angels to surround me with light and love. You know, when I'm doing readings, it's all with the highest and best intention, and I can feel that connection of the divine with us in those moments, and with the angels. And they really are an amazing support crew, not just with readings, but in my life. And they help to crush negative energy. There's a feeling of connection with them, those luminous teachings that they can share with us at any given moment. Please know that you can do that too. If you have some experiences of this beautiful light and love that you've had with angels, let me know today. Give a like or a heart or however that works, and give a positive comment about it too. And then we also have angels that are intermediaries between the human and angelic planes that take human form. Sometimes the guardian angels will do that. Sometimes what people are needing is a parking lot angel. I have teased about this before. my children are well trained in the sense that they remind me of when we need angels sometimes. And it seems to regularly happen, let's say, if we're traveling or if we're in the car and we need a parking lot space. So we're like, talk to the parking angel, Mom. And so I think it's good if you know who you need to talk to get something done. And it's amazing what occurs when you put yourself in alignment with the divine and alignment with that manifesting positive nature. And angels are certainly representative of those things. Now, in my research, I found something, a name of an angel I had never heard of before. So this name of the angel is for the angel that accompanies people when they're dying. And it's an angel that helps the dying in their last moments and leads their soul beyond death. Now, that is a very important angel. And the name for that group of angels is called psychopomp. What an odd word when you think of it. But if you take that from the Greek, it means guide of souls. Psycho means souls. Psycho always is about souls. Like when you do psychometry, you're doing things on a soul level, reading things on measuring of the soul, psychometry is. So we have psychopomp angels, which are a guide of souls when they're in that understanding. So it's great that you know that angels do assist people in their passings. I have noted that myself in my own family and friends, but also with clients, sometimes it gets mentioned. And I can tell you, it's amazing the stories that people have shared with me about their angels, but also when someone is passing and what they perceive. And I really give credit to the people who have gone before us in terms of angelology and the history of encounters with angels, because they really have tried to set this up for us. I'm grateful that people in the Middle Ages, even though that was such a difficult time for many people, you'd have plagues, you'd have wars, there were always something that seemed to be going on. But the Middle Ages was a very big time for the interest in angels, and we see that in the art and in the architecture of cathedrals. Or if you go to art museums, you can really see the halo that's around angels and the aura that is around those who are of spiritual understanding. It was a way to represent connection with the divine. And so I really enjoy looking at the angels of that time period, especially the Renaissance. It's kind of my favorite one. But Baroque times, they really did a lot with angels. A lot of the little angels, the little angel cherubs that adorn things. But it's really represented in the literature of the time of the Middle Ages. You have Dante who wrote about the different circles of hell. And I'll tell you, I tried to slog through that one time in my early 20s. And I don't think I want to return to it because it was so difficult to get through. It's a big, thick volume. If you've read Dante, my hat is off to you. But the biggest attempt to understand angels was by Thomas Aquinas, who was born in 1225, died 1321, and he is really considered the great genius who continues to influence philosophy to this day, who really I feel is kind of the biggest angelologist because of all of his work and the way he influenced people with his work. And he's actually known as the angelic doctor because of his much-loved work on angels. And so I'm grateful that the Middle Ages really sustained the understanding of angelology and angels and connection with angels, because you've got all those saints, and some of you are probably really familiar, more familiar with saints than I am. So I apologize in advance if I butcher any of these names of saints. That I wasn't really raised in that tradition of having to memorize saints what you send the prayers to them, who's in the hierarchy. But I'm learning, and I think it's nice to know who to make your request to. Of course, the biggest request should always be to God and your own soul connecting with God. But it's sometimes nice to know that we've got other people on our team, as it were. And so I remember reading about St. Agnes. She was born in 1247, died in 1317. She received communion at the hands of an angel 10 times. And these are things that were written about and experienced by them. St. Risa of Viterbo, around that same time of St. Agnes, angels appeared several times, and they actually predicted future events. Have you ever had an angel come to you and help predict a future event? I think that is really amazing. They were able to predict the death of the Emperor Frederick II before it occurred. And when we get that information in advance, not everything is written, but there are higher probabilities of outcome, energy that's crystallizing for that to occur. And we're usually given that information so that we can be stronger in the moment when it comes. And so I like to study how people have experienced things spiritually, and I think it's really cool that her angels appeared several times. A lot of times with the saints, they really had quite a close affinity relationship with their angels. And St. Clare of the Cross, 1275 to 1308, always went barefoot, slept on hard boards, and ate nothing but bitter herbs and bread, and angels appeared to her regularly. So there's your diet. If you want, guys, if you think that's what's going to work for you. Now, I'm teasing about that because I'm going to be getting into what somebody else, some other saints, ate exclusively so that they could have experiences with angels. But Joan of Arc was a very, very famous one, 1412 to 1431. She saw the Archangel Michael at the age of 13, and he announced that she had been chosen to save France from England, and he became a divine companion for Joan, supporting her in very critical moments. We also have St. Catherine of Siena. She was an Italian mystic and a church teacher, and her goal was to become a terrestrial angel. I had never read this about her before, but she wanted to be a terrestrial angel, an angel on earth. And so for many long years, she ate nothing but communion wafers. That does not seem to be the best diet. I do feel that fasting has its place, but only eating communion wafers. Her soul often reached a state of union with God, and many times she didn't know whether she was inside or outside of her body. I think that's kind of interesting. And she had many experiences with angels. I think they were probably doing their best to assist her in her experiences and try to keep her in her body. I don't feel that people need to eat only communion wafers, though, in order to have angel experiences, which is why I'm mentioning it. I do feel fasting has its place. Eating nothing for many, many years but communion wafers does not seem the best way to go. So I hope you can appreciate what I'm telling you. We also have Saint Gemma. She was 1879 to 1903, and she was on very familiar terms with her guardian angel, and she could see other people's angels. I love that this was something that people experienced and they were a bit in awe of, but that they supported. Do you understand? That people support the seeing of angels, that in different points of history, seeing angels, knowing about angels, talking about guardian angels has been fully accepted in certain historical and religious spaces. So I want to bring that back. I want to be able for us to all talk about angels and our angel experiences with each other. So when I look back in history and how other people were touted as connecting with their angels, I get very excited. One of the people I wanted to share was Therese Newman. She was not a saint, but she was 1898 to 1962, so the 1960s there. After a serious illness, she began to have visions every Friday, like clockwork. Every Friday, she would receive visions, and she even was one of the people that had stigmata, and that carried on for 36 years, and she ate nothing but communion wafers. I'm sorry for laughing about that, but that's amazing. It's so bland. She had the gift of bilocation, and she described her guardian angel as a wingless being of light that protected her. And during her vision, she spoke in languages such as Hebrew and Aramaic. Now, if you look back on the history of mediums, there are mediums that have been able to talk in different languages. Andrew Jackson Davis is one of them. You know, there are people that have, without having known the language, they are able to speak it. And they've usually had a deep connection with their soul and with angels to make this happen. And I love it. But that she was actually noted as having the gift of bilocation and being able to do that, and that she had visions every Friday. So I do feel that that's possible. If you sit mind, body, spirit for a certain intention, which is why I recommend people do development classes and circles, weekly development classes and circles, because then you do align yourself energetically for that to happen. So you get used to what that feels like. It's kind of like if you got used to taking a walk at a certain time of day, and if you missed your walk that day, you feel funny. Or if you have some other ritual that really seems to help you in your mind, body, spirit, like walking, maybe it's meditation, maybe it's playing music, maybe it's creating a piece of art, however that works for you, there are wonderful opportunities for us to feel that higher vibration. And we can set it up like clockwork if we want to. You could say every day, this is what I'm going to set my intention to. Whether someone shows up that day or not is up to them, because they can't always be there every time we ask. But I think it's wonderful that she was able to have these visions. So, I also wanted to tell you about this one. Teresa Palmanata, she was born 1896 to died 1934, a deaf Italian mystic, and she would call her guardian angel Dear Angel. And Dear Angel would accompany her in the form of a white butterfly and helped her overcome her hearing handicap. I think that's beautiful, Dear Angel. And this white butterfly. And so often people have felt that they're accompanied by butterflies or dragonflies in their spiritual experiences. And that her angel, she knew that that's how her angel was manifesting for her. Now, I'm getting to the end of this thing here. Emanuel Swedenborg. I want to make sure I mention Emanuel Swedenborg. And you may have heard me mention Emanuel Swedenborg just a couple weeks ago. We were talking about Andrew Jackson Davis because he was considered a mentor and guide to Andrew Jackson Davis during his mediumship journey here on Earth. Now, Emanuel Swedenborg had been born many, many years before and died many years before Andrew Jackson Davis. And he was born in 1688, died in 1772. He was a Swedish scientist. So he's a scientist in Sweden who was very, very well known at the time, was very well respected by the crown heads of Europe, and he figured out a whole bunch of things. Well, when he got older, around 55, the age of 55, is when he started to learn, he learned how to communicate with angels and spirits, and also with those that have passed. And he had access to prophetic knowledge. In fact, he gave a very detailed description of a city fire that was 250 miles away. All of a sudden, he just had that vision and knew. And we're given these kinds of revelations, like I said, that this is something that is a normal thing, but you can have a gentle request, but it cannot be a demand, and it just has to come in those moments. And that's what I'm seeing when I read historically, not just in my own experience, but historically, these things just happen. There is some lead up occasionally as far as people getting used to a certain ritual, like I said, mind, body, spirit, that really aligns them energetically to that. And I do feel Emanuel Swedenborg got to that space. He was very much considered a mystic and a theologian by the end of his life. And he gave a very detailed description of angels in his book, Heaven and Hell. And so if you want to read up more about Emanuel Swedenborg, I highly recommend him because he is someone that we credit in spiritualism as helping and assisting in our movement even before what was called modern spiritualism in 1848. Because spiritualism is really an ancient thing. As you can see, people have been talking to angels. People have been talking to those that have passed, and that this has a sense of normalcy for some people, like myself. So Rudolf Steiner, I'll just mention two other people here. Rudolf Steiner, you may have heard of him. He is the founder of biodynamic agriculture. He also is the originator of Waldorf schools, which is a wonderful alternative school program. And he is the founder of the spiritual philosophy of anthroposophy, which is the knowledge of the spiritual being. And so he has some wonderful books on all those topics, on agriculture, on the education of children, and on the education of ourselves as spiritual beings. He was born in 1861, and he died in 1925. And he really made it a big part of his life's work to educate people about their spiritual selves and the energy that we have. And he stated that angels are spiritual entities that remain invisible to most people. but are recognized by the spiritually aware. And so he was constantly encouraging people in their reading and in their experiences to connect with angels and connect with their higher self as well. Then we have Padre Pio. The reason I mention him is he was 1887 to 1968. He described an angel appearing to him as a majestic man offering support in his fight against evil. And the angel also prophesied to him that God's final victory is assured. And during confessionals, this is one of my favorite parts of Padre Pio's thing, during confessionals with his flock, you know, when they would come into confessional with him, their deepest secrets were shown to him by their guardian angels. So Padre Pio was connecting with people in confessional, their angels, in order to help them spiritually on their path. What an amazing concept. Helping people through the guardian angel is letting me know this so I can help this person through their difficulty, through their experience, and lead them more to the light. So I think that's beautiful Padre Pio was able to do that. And he also believed that angels gave him the power to understand foreign languages. So there's another one. And then you're going to find that throughout history. If you start reading about this and doing your own research about this, you will find how beautifully represented angels are, and connections with the divine and your own soul connecting to the divine. These saints, as much as they were assisted by angels, each and every one of them felt their own connection with God, and that the angels were merely assisting them in that, and then guarding them and protecting them. Now, why is it, even though I've mentioned many times over through today's show why I feel it's important we need to have talks about angels, I wanted to mention that when it comes to angel encounters, most people who have had an angel experience don't share about it. They're very hesitant. In fact, there was a study done in the United Kingdom of people who reported having seen an angel. And usually the experiences occurred when the people were middle-aged. I have noted this as well, that most people don't come to spiritual understanding or awakening until middle age, although you can come earlier. It's okay, folks. But they're usually hesitant and reticent to speak about it. They consider the angel encounters to be highly personal and also as something that other people might misconstrue. And while I've had my own experiences with angels, and that we could maybe get into another day, but many, many people have confided in me about their angel stories. Over the years, it's incredible the experiences people have had, not just with their loved ones in spirit, which is great, but also with angels. And 9 times out of 10, when they talk about this with me, they mention that they don't usually tell anyone about their angel encounters. And often they were not in a religious setting when this occurred. They were in some sort of circumstance of need, and that's when they experienced an angel in their life. So there's so many wonderful stories of angel encounters that are out there. It's in the Bible, and thank goodness this has been sustained through the years. We will always probably need angels. So it's good to know that we have them as a resource in our lives. And the thing to keep in mind is that they cannot infringe upon our free will. They cannot do that, that we have to assist them in assisting us. We have to help them to help us by asking and by expressing gratitude. And I'm sure you've seen that in different movies and TV. Sometimes Hollywood gets it right. I really enjoy It's a Wonderful Life with Jimmy Stewart that plays in Christmas time every year, and his experience with an angel. I mean, there's an example of an angel that really working hard on his behalf to try to help him find some peace and understanding of his life and of where he is in it. So the angels that are in the stories, if you read them more in depth yourself, like I said, in the Bible and other circumstances and other books and people that have had experiences with them, they are stories of help and of rescue and of protection. And in these encounters, angels appear in the guise of a stranger a lot of times. It's usually to offer some practical help. I think about that Touched by an Angel show. I mean, how popular was that? People need to know that they are supported by their angels and that they are truly working on their behalf. And there's a reason why Billy Graham calls angels the secret angels of God. Back in the 70s, I remember reading his book about angels, and he said that at that point he couldn't find much about angels. People weren't talking about angels. They must have, kind of hit the low point in talking about angels. And so I'm so glad that he decided to research this and also share his own experiences with angels in that book, Secret Angels of God, because angels have an immense task. I mean, they're in charge of watching over us. And they're watching over with all that love and emotion, and they're really trying to bring out that love and generosity in humans. And if we have increased awareness of the presence of angels, then we could access that more grateful and more fully. And it's no coincidence that people are talking about angels. There are different angel classes that are out there. There are different books about angels. You're going to see a lot if you go to a bookstore or to a library about this. And God is really trying to help our human population evolve and to learn respect and to love one another. And that source of angelic love really comes directly from God. And it's amazing how it's sprinkled throughout our lives. And sometimes we have awareness of it, and sometimes we don't. But there's angelic vibrational love is absolutely pure. When I talked earlier about how there's a vibrational difference, it's a purity of love. And when I talked about the different hierarchies of angels, and I was describing how they transmit the love and light of God, they truly do. And when you feel that, it's this radiating power into you, and then you're able to then reflect that outward to others as much as you possibly can. And angels really radiate that wonderful love abundantly. The love of angels, if used with respect, does produce miracles. And love can triumph in every situation. And when you start feeling angelic love, your existence really changes completely. And think of Jimmy Stewart, right? When he embraced that understanding, when he got into that spiritual awareness that the angel had been trying to get through to him, when his wife had tried to get through him, and that love of self, of divine self that people have to get through. So every thought for the angels, every ritual performed with faith, and every prayer will bring you closer to angelic energy and make you feel the love and protection of angels. So get excited about connecting with angels. Get excited about expressing your gratitude for the help and the love of angels in your life, because angels are doing their best to guard us. Like I said before, spiritual natural law of free will, we're in charge of how we proceed in this life. It ultimately is not about what happens to us, it's how we react to it that dictates the event. And what better use can we have of the divine love showing up in our lives and the angel messengers that come to us in those moments. So I hope that this is kind of giving you a bit of an overview. I can't cover it all. That's what your own research can do for you. But it was a quick fast forward angel encounters in history and how the evolution of angelology is so important. Thank you very much for joining me today. Join me next week. Next week I have on my show Nancy Lombardo, and we're going to be talking about life through breath. And I think it's going to be a wonderful show. So tune in next week, Wednesday, and keep posted about all the angel stories you can in your own life and the people. You might notice there are people that are going to share the So you be well, and God bless everyone. Have a wonderful week full of angel encounters. Bye-bye.